If you've ever seen the movie Straight Outta Compton, you will have no idea that he is a founding member of NWA.
So people saw me as just a rapper, producer, artist. But in parallel, when I was maybe 15 years old, I was really deep into electronics and computers.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is from the legendary group NWA in the past. You know him as Professor X or Arabian Prince. We know him now as Kim Nezel. Hopefully I pronounced your last name correctly.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen the movie Straight Outta Compton, you will have no idea that he is a founding member of NWA. He is conspicuous.
I did find out that I was standing in the back of a couple of the things. Oh, that's me? Okay, cool.
Oh, is that what they, so he did have a stand-in. Okay, well, we got him in there.
Yeah.
Kim, thank you so much for joining me. I noticed one article referred to you as Arab.
Yeah, so, you know, people get tired of that whole Arabian, too many syllables. Then my buddies start calling me Arab. And now most of my buddies just call me Rab. I'm playing like a bunch of basketball leagues and they all probably just rap. They'll sign me up as R.A.B. and that's it. So, yeah.
So we were introduced by a mutual friend, which is DJ Brandon Hoppa. Yeah. And I know him from Scratch DJ Academy, which you wouldn't know because of my lack of DJ skills probably. So we won't let that reflect on him, more about my lack of practice probably. But right. Yeah. And I think Brandon was one of the first guests that I had on the podcast. And he said, hey, you need to talk to Rab because he's a venture capitalist and he's a really big technologist and futurist. So I really appreciate you joining me today.
Oh, yeah. Love it. Love to be here.
So your background, obviously, is, you know, you had this one career, which was, I will describe as legendary, being a founding member of NWA. And then subsequently, you also were a producer and then a solo artist. And then strangely, you made a huge pivot, right?
Well, it's funny. That's what people think.
Okay.
I always say because of two things. One, the lack of internet, because I tell all the young kids when I speak at the school, like, I come from the before time. There was no internet. And, you know, the only information you got on people is what people saw. So people saw me as just a rapper, producer, artist. But in parallel, when I was maybe 15 years old, I was really deep into electronics and computers. Like I had, I was buying personal computers like way back in the day. You know what I mean? So I had this kind of dual life where I was doing technology and music at the same time. And I had, and I'm not bragging about this, I had like a really high IQ as a little kid, which wasn't a cool thing in Compton because growing up in the hood, if they find out you're smart, they're kicking your ass. You know, like you're a little nerd. No. So I had to kind of hide. Super tech nerdy kind of side.
Yep.
I hide it a little bit. But in order to be a producer in the 80s, what people don't realize, especially an electronic producer, like if you were in a band and played, you know, guitar and bass and all of that, if you're electronic doing synthesizers and stuff like that, you had to know computers because you had to be able to sequence and the audio with the Simply and, you know, sequence all your music tracks. So I was deep in it at an early age.
That makes sense because I think during that time, I would compare it to like when George Lucas was making films, right? Like the technology he was using, he was making on the fly.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and you become more or less an expert at it because you're riding the wave up as it's growing. Like you're part of that expansion of technology. And I taught myself coding. I taught myself how to do sprite animation and eventually 3D animation and special effects and how to build video games and actually started working on video games and feature films and TV shows in parallel to doing music.
Oh, that's amazing. So since then, you are pretty heavily involved in the Los Angeles venture community, right?
Yeah.
And what type of ventures are you involved in?
I'm really looking at like esports, gaming. Since I'm a self-proclaimed futurist, I'm always looking for what's next. That's why my company's called Innovate Next. Like, what's next? Like, I could give a crap about the next, you know, cell phone that's coming out or, oh yeah, you just made another one of those. No, give me something that's going to change the game. give me something that's going to change our future or actually change people's lives, because I'm really into giving back in the community. It sounds corny, everybody says that, but honestly, I really want to change like the homeless situation, or you know, how inner city kids learn and grow. You know, like, just give me something. Don't just give me nothing. You know, I'm tired of seeing a bunch of stuff. So I really look at that in the gaming space. I see the gaming space is not something that's fun, but something that's a way out for the next generation of Z-Gen or the next generation of youth coming up. Because the way out in my generation and actually subsequent generations was rap, mm-hmm. sports, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you're a basketball player, baseball player, football player, rapper. That's how you get out the hood, you know, or you're selling drugs or doing dirt. But now there's more options, video games, right? Mm-hmm. And not only playing, but there's probably 103 jobs in the video game industry right now that no one knows of. And unless somebody tells them or gives them that knowledge, they're not going to get it.
It's interesting you bring that up. So there, you probably know these numbers, but I don't think what people realize, number one, is the size of the esports market just in the USA, much less globally. And if you rank it against other sports, it's like number two right now, right?
Well, so check this out. It's only number in the US, it's only number two to the NFL. It's bigger than all the other sports.
Baseball, basketball, hockey, soccer.
It's the biggest sport in the world. Globally, it's bigger than soccer. You know, soccer is like the biggest global sport right now. Or, you know, football, what they call it, Europe. But it's the biggest because everybody plays games. Not everybody plays soccer. Not everybody plays football or basketball or baseball. But almost everybody on the planet plays games. Even people who tell me that they don't play games. I'm like, when you're sitting in the airport, and you're bored and you don't want to watch Netflix or whatever, what do? Oh, I just kind of mess around on, you know, Candy Crush. Ah!
You're a gamer.
You know, I got you. Or you play puzzle games, you do word, you know, you do something. Everybody plays some form of a game. And that's the only thing that I can think of that almost everybody does besides toilet paper, you know.
So. Which is a big problem right now. If we had all only invested in Tushy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not a sponsor of this, but if anybody knows, Tushy is like this really inexpensive bidet.
Oh, wow. I need to check that out.
Yeah, I'll send it to you if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Like, anyways, it's interesting because I have this theory that, and I don't know if this makes sense to you, if you look at university enrollment, it's now 60-40 women to men in the United States. And wow. So there's a lot of, you know, reasons behind that. But I think one of the big reasons is, number one, there's like this crushing student debt. And then there's this secret industry of esports where if you're a gamer and you're really smart and you're really capable and you play a lot of games, you can actually make a living to way more than a living, right?
Yeah, way more than a living. And I'm actually in talks with a couple of universities and just regular city colleges or whatever about, look at this. If you're not looking at this, you can see your enrollment go up like crazy if you have an esport program.
Right.
Esport team. If you offer a scholarship or some type of gaming classes or whatever, you'll see your enrollment go up because it is the future. And it's going to actually change the game. As you know, they say it's going to change the game, man, because
I think it's already changed it, right?
It has.
And I think it's just like secret. It's like this quiet revolution that's already happened.
Yeah. So I talk to people like, if you were a videographer or a cameraman or something like that, here's the crazy thing. You can go film television, you can go film movies or whatever, but you can't film esport competitions because you don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
There's all virtual cameras inside the game for filming gameplay within. So who teaches that in school? Nobody.
Nobody. That's really interesting.
And the only way to teach, and think about this too, the difference between esports and a regular sport. Basketball will always be basketball on any level, from kindergarten level to pro. It's the same game. You know, skill level changes, but it's the same game. Same thing for football, hockey, everything else. Esports, they're, I won't say hundreds, but I mean, maybe 30, 40 top games that people play in esports competitions. So that creates this weird thing where all the games are different.
Right. And
so now you have to find people that know that particular game to be able to put on a production, to be able to put on the whole event, because it has to be somebody who knows or specializes in that game. And it's only the players that know that game. So now you have to find players that maybe aren't good enough to be the pro, but they know the game well enough to be the director, the producer, the cameraman, the shoutcaster, which is the announcer. You know, so you got to find people in that community who can build that brand and build that production up. So it's really hard. And these schools and these colleges are missing out on a huge opportunity of upping their enrollment, making more money, because if it's a four-year college, they could get a ton of people wanting to go there because they do have this expansive program. And I see some of the big universities starting to get into it, UCLA, I think Oregon, and a lot of them starting to actually do that.
I have a double-edged sword on that because I almost don't want them to. I want them to keep their fingers out of it and let it just...
Well,
learn about this somewhere else, because
NCAA is trying to put their fingers in it.
Yeah, well, that's why I want it.
They're trying to keep them out, because what happens then is now they can't make money, because right now the teams can make money.
Right.
But if NCAA gets involved, that can change.
That's such a can of worms to me. I mean, I think number one, NCAA, what people don't also realize, they talk about escalating cost of post-secondary education, right? And NCAA, in my mind, is at the heart of that, because they don't want to pay you as an athlete if you're a top athlete. So it's like their justification is, well, I'm giving you $250,000 free education.
Yeah, but you're making billions.
Billions, right? And yeah. But I can't just make it $250,000 for you. I got to make that fair. So everybody's got to pay $250,000 to justify this value, right? Oh. So it just, you know, to them, it's just like flush of cash. But I think that the less they're involved in esports, the better. I mean, I think there's got to be alternative education for all those things you're talking about, which is almost like vocational, but it's going to be way cooler than, you know, DeVry or something.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Does DeVry still exist? I think it does.
I don't know if they do, but I know that, what's that other school that's similar to a DeVry?
It's like University of Phoenix, right?
One that does all of the music and...
Right. Yeah, I can't think of. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Full Sail. University. They just built an esport arena. Big, huge, big. And I'm like, they get it.
Well, a lot of NBA guys that, or a lot of NBA owners, I think, are building these esports stadiums, right? Yeah. And I know there's a bit of a challenge there, because you mentioned, for example, like the titles and the publishers of those titles are taking, unlike. Like, there's not someone in basketball that invented basketball, like James Naismith, who's a Canadian, by the way.
Yeah.
But he's not taking royalties on every basketball game, right?
No.
Whereas that's the kind of, forgive the pun, the X factor, Professor X, but the X factor in esports that has to be solved, or maybe will never be solved, is the fact that the publishers get such a big slice of the pie, and it's tough on the arenas, right? And the guy's building these big stadiums to make enough money to justify the investment. So I know a lot of them are kind of struggling, right?
Yeah, and it's not only that, it's too, because every kid who plays has a computer at home, and a lot of them can't get there. So they're at home doing their thing, they're online. And I think what's going to end up happening is, and this is what I foresee, and that's why my gamble in the venture space is not as much the teams, but the infrastructure. Because everybody's trying to build. And if you put your money in infrastructure and create companies that are building this out, I think it's going to be just as, not huge arenas that make the money, but smaller little centers in neighborhoods so that kids can get to, and not to play, but training centers.
See, this goes back to what I was saying about the vocational thing. So you get it. Like, I think that's the way to go. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's not about playing anymore.
UCLA, you stay out of this.
So
yeah. That's really interesting. And there, you know, what's interesting too, I think, is the fact that there's like this retail wave of, you know, death, where the retail apocalypse is probably putting a lot of pressure on space. Hopefully that translates to a lot of available space for these things that isn't exorbitant, which I'm not sure if it does. But, oh, sorry. We'll cut that.
Good ideas about that one.
Yeah. Wait, I'm ahead of myself.
That's true. It is what it is. Like, we're talking to malls now about doing alternative stuff with their spaces to drive traffic, you know.
And, it might be too early, though, right? You might need to let them bleed and pain a little bit more.
No, they're bleeding. Believe me, they're bleeding. I walk in, like just half the Sears store is closed. So there's, like, a huge space that they can't do anything with because who's moving in there?
Nobody.
Maybe Dick's Sporting Goods. I've seen Dick's Sporting Goods kind of come in and take some spots, but even they're
crazy if they do, I think. I don't know. That's weird.
Yeah. So it's going to be alternative. I think a lot of these big malls and shopping centers will have to start dealing with more, getting into entertainment more.
Right.
Not just a theater. Like, what other types of entertainment can you have to supplement these stores so you can buy people? You got to figure that out.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge. Is landlords are just, you know, thinking about real estate cap X and stuff, right? They're not thinking of the retail experience, and apparently neither are retailers, and that's why they're, I think, kind of dying, right? Like, they're.
Yeah, I mean, I wish somebody would hire me at Sears. I could turn that company around. And
you don't want to work there, my friend.
No, I'm serious. Have you ever walked?
I think that guy's riding it into the. He's like a vulture capitalist. He's
like. Is where people go to die. You walk into Sears, I'm like, that's the same shirt I saw 10 years ago on the same rack.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He doesn't care about that. He's a vulture capitalist. He's making money on the death spiral.
I can tell. You know, like, put some paint on the walls or something. Like, you know what I mean? But they don't want to. It's crazy.
What was funny about that story is how he used the Kmart asset to do a reverse takeover of the bigger Sears, right?
Yeah.
And I remember him probably, like, was it 13 years ago or something, I guess, on the cover of Business Week. And it's like, is this the next great builder? And I'm like, you don't understand this guy.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I noticed you're also involved in robotics.
Yeah. I work with the LAFTC First Tech Challenge robotics competition. They made me the interim president of that, so that's cool. I'm totally into the robotics, artificial intelligence, anything that has to do with building and creating or designing. I'm totally into that space, and that I think that's the push for the future, is getting the next generation to understand that they are the creators. They have to create the future instead of just embracing current. You know, like, okay, I got a phone. I'm good. No, what's next? Like, you know what I mean? Don't wait for somebody else to do it. Do it and make it happen. So,
I think one of the interesting things that happened, if we look at it, like, you know, iPhone came out in 2007, and that kind of opened my eyes, because I was in the wireless carrier space, and I said, geez, this is, like, way easier than what I've been doing with, like, building stuff for wireless carrier networks. I'm just going to go build apps. And that's kind of where I broke out. So if you think about it, it's like, really, the app market's kind of 10 years old, 11 years old, right? iPad came out basically 10 years ago. And, you know, so that is, you know, obviously apps are kind of core. But what that did, I think, is it gave not only companies, but individuals this goop to make stuff. Because they looked at this little application, everyone felt empowered to, you know, have an idea and turn it into something.
Right. Yeah.
I think what you're saying is interesting, because have you read Peter Diamandis much?
No.
So Peter Diamandis, and I write about this in my book, so I'm really just referencing him. He talks about six exponential technologies. And I think what I'm trying to encourage people to do is, if you want an impactful venture, not just a feature based venture, you want an impactful venture that, you know, understands, here's these six exponential technologies, and there's still computers and networks. You know, that's still driving a lot of innovation. I will lump in 5G with that, right? I will lump in quantum computing. I think he might too. But robotics, AI, 3D printing, and then he touches on digital medicine and then synthetic biology. So you're in two of those spaces for sure.
Yeah.
Actually, probably three, right?
No, actually four, because I'm actually getting into the medical space too.
Medical, okay.
Yeah, we're starting a supplement company right now for people who are in technology, because I look at it this way. Most people take supplements, you know, for their health, or when they're exercising or working out or when they're in sports or whatever. But there's a lot of people just sitting around stagnant, and you got to create a separate type of, you know, supplementation for you type of people that are in the world. Like technology, like even me, I find myself, even though I play a lot of golf and a lot of basketball, I find myself sitting a long time in front of a computer.
Right.
You know, and you need supplements for that, for being stagnant. So we're working on some stuff. You know, like I said, you got to figure out, as we don't want to be Wall-E. We don't want to be, you know, remember the movie Wall-E?
That's what I always think of too, is Wall-E.
Spaceship like this, not moving, and just everything is there. So, yeah.
Great. You know what's scary is that's actually a really good movie, funny enough, like the cartoon Wall-E, where you're referencing is people on a spaceship in chairs where they're so big and they're drinking giant sodas. And
Yeah, because they don't have to do anything at all. It's done for them, everything. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. Well, listen, I want to be conscious of your time. Is there anything we haven't touched on that you would like to make sure that we get some message out, or is there a way to get in touch with you?
You know, like I said, man, you know, I'm into a lot of things in the gaming space and music space, but I'm really passionate about the message for the future generations, because I'm getting old. We're all getting old, and somebody's got to take care of us. And I don't see it happening right now. I'm like, hey, what are y'all doing? Nothing?
Well, I firmly believe that entrepreneurs change the world. So I want to see people focus on the reality of that, which is, listen, if you're, it's funny. I saw a movie. Have you ever seen the movie The Candidate with Robert Redford from 1972? And it's interesting. They've been sneaking it on airplanes. And if you watch that movie, he's talking the exact same topics that we're talking about in elections and politics today. Nothing's changed.
And that's the problem. I always ask. I'm the worst person to put in a corporate meeting, because I'm disrupting that meeting, because I'm always asking why. Like, why do you do it this way? Why are there these protocols? Like, you're slowing things down. Like, what the hell is this? Why do I have to sign that? What is it? And they're like, whoa, we're slowing down. Like,
no, I'm the same.
You're a big corporate company with billions of dollars, and you slow down your own process and waste so much money. You know what I mean? And then you have like the younger generation, which those are your creators. So go get them young. Find that 14-year-old kid, that 12-year-old kid who has an amazing idea, and fund that. And I'm not saying don't fund the startups that, you know, the guys coming out of universities, but there's ideas everywhere, young kids and elderly people. Start getting out of this box of who you invest in or who you sit down in a pitch meeting. And just open your mind and go into inner city. I call it black gold in inner city, because if you think about this, I'm going to say this. Think about every success out of the inner city, whether it's a rapper, a clothing designer, whatever. They don't have money, but they have hunger.
Right.
And they end up making billions of dollars off of nothing. Imagine if they had support, if they had somebody that could fund things in the inner city. You would have so many ideas come out of there. It's a gold mine. But I'm pushing these investors that way. They don't understand it, and I'm pushing them that way. I'm pushing them into esports. I'm pushing them into gaming, you know. So yeah.
I love that. As I talked to you before we came on camera, I've started something called Founders Pack.
Yeah.
My idea around Founders Pack is pretty much like you're echoing a lot of things. So I'm trying to hold myself back, but you know, I want to, over 10 years, I'm like, listen, what's the next 10 years for me? I want to create this vehicle where founders can meet, but more, I want to be able to provide from education up to the point where we're helping ventures like scale. So impactful ventures as opposed to feature-based ventures, right? So I'm really interested in the same thing. I want to invite you to do something with me if you're into it.
Yeah, totally into it. What you got?
Okay, so this is what I'm thinking is my plan with Founders Pack is to, first of all, build the community around this Japanese Keiretsu model, which is, and people don't understand this Keiretsu model that's from the 80s, really, in lore, but it's really a group of cooperative companies. And in those days, they would form around a bank that had patient capital. But what I think is we need to educate startup founders. One, yeah, this is how you create an impactful venture about the technologies, right? Jump on one of these transformational technologies. but then I want people to form their own pack, which is allies and alliances, and form around four things: data, relationships, technology, and talent. So what I would like to do is I'll talk to you about it offline, but I'm planning on announcing a date in Santa Monica to do the next Founders Pack live event. Okay. And maybe you can come and be the speaker the first 10 minutes.
I'd love to do it. I can have it up.
Beautiful. I love it. Okay. I'm excited about that. The rest of the agenda, so you know, is rather than doing fireside chats, what we do is we bring in three, you know, startup founders and we play the founders game. So have you ever seen the dating game from the 70s?
Yeah.
So the founders game is three founders vying for the love and attention of an advisor or an investor that doesn't see them till after they pick them.
Oh, I love it. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. And then the final part is anybody can come and make a 1-minute pitch. So that we'll figure out a date and we'll announce it, but I'd be excited to have you as the feature.
Oh, love to be there.
Definitely. Okay, perfect. And then we can talk about, like, if there's other spots that I'm overlooking. Like, I'm thinking Santa Monica because it's a startup area, but, you know, you probably know other places where this would go over. Because what I really want to do is the same thing you do, is I want to find young entrepreneurs and teach them, like, look, you're seeing the final product over here of Google, you know, of Amazon and all the stuff. This is how you build an impactful venture in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, let's figure it out. There's a lot of places we can do it. I just partnered with the city of Garden Grove. So I'm friends with the mayor of Garden Grove, and were gracious enough to let me come in and actually try and help them become the next technology spot. So yeah. Right next to Disneyland. Like, it's crazy. Like, most of the hotels for Disneyland are in Garden Grove.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They get millions of people a year to the hotels, to the restaurants, but that's all they do. And then they go to Disneyland. There's really nothing much in other than that in Garden Grove. So I came in and I'm like, look, let's bring gaming in here, esports in here. Let's bring technology in. Let's get some startups in here.
Yeah.
So without calling it out, I coined it, and the mayor was gracious enough to talk about it. Without calling it Silicon Grove.
Holy crap, that's amazing. I love it. We have Silicon Beach, but Silicon Grove makes total sense.
And it's already going. We've already done a bunch of VC pitches there, and we'd love to bring your model there and do something out there as well.
Okay, awesome. Let's consider it. We will figure out a date and we will announce it. That's amazing.
Cool.
Okay, I'm going to wrap up with three things. The first is, it's said that you are the sum of the five people that you spend the most time with. Who do you spend the most time with?
Oh my God, because I don't really spend the most time with five people. I'm kind of, honestly, man, I'm like almost like a recluse. I'm like, what was that? What was the movie?
Hanks.
Lee Herman. I'm a daddy, a rebel. That's what he said. Like, seriously, I'm really walking the chocolate factory, man. I mean, I'm in the lab, I'm creating, I'm doing my thing. So, I mean, there might be five facets to me because I'm a Gemini. But really, I spend most of my time just hunkered down in the lab.
Oh, okay. Well, that's totally different. That's great. That explains a lot of things, right? The evil mastermind. Well, not evil. The benevolent. Okay. So the second last thing I'll ask is, how are you, Arabian Prince, changing the world?
By giving the knowledge and putting the message out there and not being scared to put the message out there. Like, when I speak at schools, I'm not worried about the kids as much as the teachers, the faculty, and the parents. I want them to get the knowledge. They need to understand the change in our world, the change that's going on. So I'm more barking at them saying, hey, listen to these kids. These kids are smarter than you think. They already know what's going on. You got to catch up to them. So I'm not afraid to tell them that and explain to them why, and say that you need to maybe teach a little bit differently because this model of teaching now is very slow.
Yeah. That's very true.
Like, give me the information. And it's like this. So I'm, you know, the knowledge, man, it's all about giving back knowledge.
That's such a big topic. And maybe we can do another episode on that sometime, because for me, you just hit the nail on really on the head there.
Yeah.
Which is, why is there a monopoly on this public education thing?
Yeah. There you
go. It's too slow. Bureaucracy and this test culture, and there's a lot of other bad things about it.
Yeah.
I would love, you know, I think the idea behind public education has probably evolved, where it was originally make sure everybody had an education. And I don't think there's a lack of information or opportunities to be educated. So it'd be really, we got to think of something different.
Oh yeah, most definitely. We can talk about that one.
And I love your answer. So thank you very much. That's amazing. Okay. So we're going to wrap up with one thing, which is when we have amazing guests on the Automate and Grow podcast, we like you to nominate another guest that you know that would be either an expert or an entrepreneur that would be an exciting guest for a future episode. So who would you, Arabian Prince, like to nominate as a future guest?
I got one for you. The mayor of Garden Grove.
Oh.
I'll get you a mayor. How about that one?
I'm down with that. Okay. What's his name?
Steve Jones.
Steve Jones, you've been nominated to be a future guest of the Automate and Grow podcast.
Yes, I'm going to connect you guys and you can make that happen. He's an amazing guy and he speaks it like it is as well.
I love it. Okay, so Steve Jones, you've been nominated and we're going to talk to you about doing a Founders Pack event there together.
There you go.
This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on the next episode of Automate and Grow.